couple of weeks ago, I started a sermon with you to talk about the Shema, which is a prayer that Jews recite every morning and every evening. It's something that they recognize the importance of keeping it in front of them, in front of their mind. Jesus quoted the Shema. That's what Connor just read for us. Jesus quoting it as the greatest commandment. The word Shema starts from the first word of that command. Hear. It was hear, O Israel. We talked about how the idea of Shema being listen. It's more than hear. It's translated hear, but there's not separate words for hear and listen. So hear, listen, and obey. I mean, it's to internalize that. That idea there was that the importance of this. So we looked at the idea of Shema, and it's not just for Israel. It is for us as well. And then, that's the word Shema. And then we see the word Lord that's here used in this command. And we talked about how that word Lord kind of came to be. And the word that's actually in the Hebrew is the word Yahweh. And remember when Moses faced God in the burning bush, and God told Moses how to call him. He actually used the name that he was to use for him, and that name was in Hebrew Yahweh. Interestingly, in that translation, as it's gone through time, God telling Moses to use my name Yahweh, the translators thought people shouldn't use that word. It should be sacred and not spoken. And so they did everything they could to make it a word that would not be spoken. And we see that down to today in the translations of our Bible, the word Lord, where the word Lord is capitalized, all four letters. That is a translation from the word Yahweh. And we see even in that Adonai, which is the idea of Lord, was used in place. And we saw the idea that they took the consonants from Yahweh and the vowels from Adonai, and they put them together, and they came up with the word Jehovah, which we see. So that's where we get the word Jehovah. It's not the name that God called himself. It's the mixing of terms that the translators did to keep the name Yahweh as being sacred. But we see this idea, and we see what God says about himself and what is important from his perspective for us, for the Israelites, and for us as well, to remember that he is, that Yahweh is our God. He is our God. He's different than all those other gods, the gods that we might pursue, that we see those ideas of separate deities that were pursued by people in old times. And we see today that there are so many different ideas and things that people pursue, goals that people pursue in their lives as a deity. And the idea here is that deity, the only deity that is ours, is Yahweh. And that he is one. There is no other Yahweh. There is no other God. There is no one else who can do the things, who exists for these reasons. All those others are figments of our imagination. We see that with the gods of the other nations. We see that today as people pursue power or money or something else as their God, and they're meaningless. They don't give them the power that they think that they're going to get from those things. So we've got Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And then it says, you shall love the Lord. And we talked about love and the word, the Hebrew word, ahava, ahava. And are you guys tired of me with Hebrew words yet? I'm going to have to Okay, we won't do more Hebrew words for a while. This is the idea of love. And when we look at that word, the Hebrew word ahava that is used here, it's a strong and broad type of love or affection. It's used for different types of love, but in a single word. We saw it, Abraham having the parental love for Isaac. Abraham, ahava, Isaac. We see Jonathan had ahava for David, that brotherly love, that close companionship. From the what we just studied in class this morning, the Israelites showed ahava towards David following his deliverance of them from the Philistines. We see that there's a lot of different ideas that go out there that are wrapped up in that type of love that is ahava, and that we are to have for God. So you think about it in the broadest, strongest possible term when we talk about the idea of love. And we see that love that God showed for us as well. God chose us at a time when we didn't earn it. It was not because of who we were. It was because of who he was. That was the love, the ahava that he had towards us. It is part of his character. It is who he is. We sing the song, God is love. And that's the idea here. And so this, when we talk about, you know, we are to love the Lord our God, it is with that love that is God, that he has shown for us, that he has is part of his character, and bring that in. Okay, so today, that's our review. Hopefully everybody remembered all of that. Let's see if I can do this without these glasses that are falling off. In describing how we are to love God, how we are to show the ahava, there's different things that are given with all of our. And so we have heart, soul, and strength that are listed here. So I want to talk about those this morning, and just a little bit about that. When we see the idea here of heart, we'll stay on the same philosophy here of the Hebrew word, levah. Levah is the word for heart. Now, the Old Testament times, people understood the idea that there was an organ of life. There was an organ that kept you alive, and we understand that as well, you know, how important the heart is to keep us animated, to keep us alive. In 1 Samuel 25, we see Nabal had a heart attack. That's how it is described, when he died, when his heart died inside him and he became a stone. But they didn't understand, they understood that idea of what the heart was, but they didn't understand much else of how man was made up. They didn't understand the things that were there. They're not talking about, you know, loving God with all of your blood pump. That's not the idea that's here. The Old Testament writers ascribed a lot of different things to the heart because they didn't understand those things. Much of the intellectual activity they ascribe to the heart. In Proverbs 14, verse 13, we're told that wisdom dwells in the heart. Well, we wouldn't think that way from an anatomy standpoint, but it helps us understand what they meant by the word levah. Okay? It's the idea of where wisdom, the intellect, resides. The heart discerns between truth and error. We wouldn't say, you know, our heart discerns between truth and error, but our intellect, our ability to be able to discern what's right and wrong, that wisdom is part of what they ascribe to the word heart. That's part of what we're to use here as well. Emotions are assigned to the heart. A broken heart is a biblical concept. Hannah felt pain in her heart when she couldn't have more children. 1 Samuel 1 and verse 8. And happiness is described as a heart of joy in Jeremiah 15 and verse 16. So we can see that the intellect is there, the emotions are there. Those are things that are also ascribed to the heart. And so when we start talking about how we are to love God, it is with all of our intellect, all of our emotions. All of these things that we have are to go into the type of love that we show to God. But that's not all. The heart is also where desires, where choices are made that are motivated by desires. David had it in his heart to build a temple for the Lord in 2 Samuel chapter 7. Psalm 37 refers to the desires of the heart. Proverbs warns us to guard your heart because from it flows your whole life. So again, this is something that we would see, and I don't know, you know, how you would describe your desires, whether that's emotion or intellect. Sometimes we might say that's something different, but clearly that is something that they would refer to as the heart. And so when we look at all of our heart loving God, it's not just what we can intellectually come up with. It's not a purely an emotional feeling, but it is cultivating a desire for God. It is using our desire to love God. The heart, and ironically, the heart is that which leads us away from God and to sin. Those desires pull us away. Jeremiah said, the heart of a human is deceitful above all, irreversibly sick. Who can even understand it? That is Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. The renewal of the heart is seen as the only way to get back to God. We see how we become separated from God, and we've talked about Christ removing that sin so that we can get back to God. But it's not just Jesus opening the path for us to get back to God. As we talked about in class today, we have to complete the mission. We have to go back to God, and that comes by renewing our heart. Moses talked about circumcising the heart to cut out evil and stubbornness, Deuteronomy chapter 30. David asked God to create in me a pure heart after he had sinned in Psalm 51. And in Ezekiel 35, Ezekiel wanted God to remove the heart of stone and give the people a new heart of soft flesh. So we see here, you know, this illustration using the word heart, talking about changing that desire. They talk about in terms of changing the heart. They're changing the desire for God. A desire that has pulled them away from God has to change so that they now have a desire to pull close to God. And the Shema is saying to use our sinful, deceitful lava heart to love, to avaha, Jehovah. It is a dedication to having Yahweh renew our heart that can appropriately love Yahweh without the stain of sin. So we're asking, when we love Avaha, Yahweh, what we are wanting is God to, in this language, change our heart, creating us that new desire that is committed to God, removing the sin and stain that made our heart, our desires, set and fixed like stone against God, and make it soft and appealing and inclined towards God. That's the idea that they're talking about here when it's saying love the Lord with all of your heart. Using that heart, not just the heart that's taken us away from God, but a heart that's been changed, a heart that shows intellect, shows emotion, most importantly, shows a desire pulling for God, inclining towards God, cutting out that stone, that hardness that pulled us away from God. Next is we're told to love our God with all of our soul. Now, we typically, or we've often heard the idea of the soul being that non-physical, immortal asset or essence of a person that is contained in the body and is released at death. Have you ever heard that? Okay, you've got your body, and then you got a soul, and it's separate and here and goes. The idea here of nephesh, which is used here for the word soul, is a different idea. It's not that. Focus on what nephesh is in the Bible, so that we know how our nephesh, how our soul, is to love God, as we're told in the Shema. A basic use of the word nephesh, which is translated soul, is actually throat. Throat. How do we get from throat to soul? The Israelites in the wilderness complained. Let me get there. The Israelites in the wilderness complained that their nephesh had dried up when they were thirsty. Their throats were dry. When Joseph's brother sold him into slavery, his nephesh was put into iron shackles. So when they put an iron shackle around his throat, that was the idea of nephesh. We don't, again, the word soul here isn't throat, but it understanding that that word is translated elsewhere, throat, helps us understand how it's used here. So just as the shackles around Joseph's throat controlled his whole being, I mean, they put him in shackles so that they could lead him off into slavery, right? And they could control him. He couldn't fight back. So nephesh also refers to the whole person. They controlled the whole person by controlling the throat. The Old Testament uses nephesh to refer to persons. In the Torah, a murderer is a nephesh slayer. That's Numbers 31. A kidnapper is a nephesh thief. So we see here the idea of, whether you're taking somebody's whole life, you're kidnapping their whole being, those are nephesh when it's talking about the entirety of the person. People don't have a nephesh, they are a nephesh. Nephesh being the entirety, body and soul, everything that is wrapped up in our being, the entirety is our nephesh. When it talks about soul, it's talking about our entire being. When we love the Lord, love Yahweh with all our soul, we are loving Him with all our being. We can't say, I'm going to carve off a piece and say, well, I'll give Him my Sunday mornings. We can't carve off a piece and say, well, I'm going to give Him my outward actions. What I think in my heart is for me. He doesn't get that. He only gets my body. I will. And this is a problem that the Pharisees had, remember? They looked at, what have you done? Not what's your mind. What is your, what is your attitude towards these things? And we see people today doing that. People who can do good things. People who can go through worship. But yet, when you see what's in their mind, it's far from God. You haven't given your nephesh if you're only giving your body. Or likewise, you can't give your mind. We see a lot of people want to live that way today. Oh, I love God and I do that, but I'm just not going to do these things. I don't want to give Him my physical obedience. I'm just going to give Him, you know, my mind. I'm gonna intellectually love God. That's not your nefesh. That's not your whole being. That's carving out a piece of it. And so when Jesus says, or when God through Moses tells the Israelites, love God with all your soul. He's talking about all your nefesh, all of your being. To love God with all of your nefesh means to devote your whole physical existence to God. Loving God and loving His creation. We can't carve out a piece. Or Psalm 42 as well. That is the song that we sing. As the deer pants for the water. You know that song? So my nefesh thirst for the living God. The idea there being that just like a deer who, you know, has been out running all day and is parched and comes in the evening to the brook and wants to get water. Got to have that water. That's the idea, that level of commitment, that entirety of needing and giving. That's the nefesh that we give. Then we look at all of your strength. So we see love your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. The word here is miad or miod, and it doesn't mean strength. I don't know why, going through this, we have so much criticism of the translators. I don't normally have that level of criticism for the translators, but we can see that there's a word in Hebrew that means strength, and that's not the word that they used. So if we want to try and understand what was behind this in Hebrew, if we want to understand it as Jesus quoted it, rather than just looking at what the English translators have put in, we need to go back and look at some of these Hebrew words. Miad is actually an adverb, which is going to make this even a little bit harder. It's an adverb that means very or much. In Genesis 1, God looked at the creation and calls it miod good. Remember how he said it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good each day? And at the end of the week, he said it's very good. That's the same word, miod. That very is the same word that's used here for all of our strength. Using the Hebrew language, Shema calls for love of God with all of your muchness. With all of your veryness. That's a strange language. That's not the way we use grammatically. That's not how we use language. But it explains the idea of extending the command, requiring devotion of every possibility, every opportunity, and every capacity to honor God. When we look at that, it's kind of a and everything else when it talks about strength. Anything else that you draw strength, your veriness, anything that you think you've got very or you've got much, anything that you have, anything that God has given you much, anything, all of these things, they're all to demonstrate your love for God. That's how you do it. Remember the Pharisees, and Jesus quoting this, and the Pharisees trying to trip him up. But the idea here, you know, for them, much of what they were doing was to go down and distill the law down to the exactness of what we have to do, right? I don't want to do anything more than what I have to do. So when he says, love with all your miod, what he's saying is, no, not with your minimum, it's with your everything. It is with your muchness, with your veriness. It is with all of the things that you have been given. That's what you are to that's what you are to demonstrate your love to God with, your honor to God. So how did the English word strength end up here? When the Old Testament was translated into Greek, they used the word for power or strength. And in ancient Aramaic translations, it was interpreted as wealth. You can see how you go from one to the other, but pretty soon you realize that the word that you come up with is pretty far afield from where you started. When Jesus quoted the Shema, he used two words, mind and power. When Connor was reading this, he didn't have three. He had four. And his mind and power, okay? And with the idea here, they're trying to get something more out of this rather than just the idea of strength. The idea of strength was missing the mark in terms of a translations. So what do we do with all of this as we look at this? The word miod isn't used to limit the Shema, or to limit the ahava, the love that we show God. The point is that everything and every way and every opportunity we are to show love. It is a call to love God with all of our muchness. So as we look back at the idea of the Shema, and God told Moses to have them keep this in front of them. Remember how it was, I'm telling you this is what it is, but then I want you to write it. They recited it twice a day, still recite it twice a day. They wrote it in a little tiny script and put it on a necklace that would go around their forehead, and so it would be right here in front of their eyes constantly. They would put it on an armband so that it's on their muscles. They would have little tiny inscriptions of the Shema. They would have on their doorpost as they would go through the door, open the door and going out into the world, there's a carved, a small hole, and within that is a little scrap of paper with the Shema carved in it. God's expectation when Moses gave them this and what they did with it was, this is important. I need to keep this in front of me all the time. And when we, I remember where we started, as we looked at this idea, and he says, hear, O Israel. Hear, O Israel. And we saw how the shepherds would come in the morning to the communal pen. Lots of different shepherds had put all of their flock in one pen, right? And the shepherd would call out. Sheep would recognize their shepherd when he called them, and they would separate themselves and go out. He didn't have to go in and pick them out one by one and drive some out and leave others there. He called them. And that idea, which, you know, can be seen in that culture, we see described to us by the Good Shepherd. Jesus said, I'm the Good Shepherd. I call and my sheep hear my voice. They recognize my voice. They respond to me. This is what he's talking about. He's talking about they have kept this concept, not these words. I mean, that, you know, it's typical of you know, Jewish ideas is you get things down to a ritual so that you don't have to think about it. And the whole point is to think about it, not do a ritual, right? He's not talking about the ritual. He's talking about the idea. The idea that Israelites, Christians, we are to hear, listen, and respond to God. We should spend so much time recognizing that He is the one God. He is our God. And spend all of our time, all of our energy, all of our thoughts loving Him. Not how little can I get away with. I'll give you a little bit of love today. I'll read a little bit of scripture. I'll do a little bit of prayer. And then I'm off to do my things. what I want to do, and I separate those two. It is the idea of taking it with you, not symbolically, but literally. The idea that God goes with us, that we look at everything that we encounter and we see God in that. We're constantly looking and amazed at the fact that there is God. There is God who is given us so much. There is God who protects us so much. There is God who has delivered us when we so didn't need it. There is God who's constantly waiting for us as we come back to Him. And as we focus in using everything, our muchness, our strength, to focus in on loving God, we recognize Him when He calls. And it makes it easier for us to fulfill our mission, to do that which He's called us to do. Not only to respond to the invitation to turn away from sin and turn back to God and receive salvation. Okay, that's all good. But He's saying, no, once you've done that, once you have that relationship with God, use God as you go out to fulfill the mission He's given you. Use your relationship to God, your love for God, to interact with other people, to demonstrate it to other people, to love His creation. When we talk about dominion, that means care for. It doesn't mean dominate, it means care for. The idea here of we love God by living up to the fact that we were created in His image, that we can follow that example that we've been given, that we can, in all of these things, love God by doing what He has asked us to do. And that means so much more than repenting of sin, being baptized, and just keeping ourselves in a right relationship. He's got more for us to do. There are things for us to do. Shema is not an interesting prayer for the Israelites. It's an essential definition of our relationship with God. It defines who God is, and it's our expected love in response to Yahweh. We cannot divide out what we are willing to dedicate to God. God's expectation is that we give Him our everything, not saving anything back for ourselves. Yahweh is allowing us to reclaim the relationship He originally created, where we are in His image and the heir to His covenant promises. If we think we can just allow His words to enter our ears, hear, but not listen, not do. I mean, have we ever, don't hold up your hand, but have you ever been guilty of that? Letting those, especially you come in here, not when Mason's preaching, but when I'm preaching, sometimes words go in one ear and right out the other. 5 minutes later, what'd he say? I don't know, We fall into that trap where we hear, but we don't listen. Sometimes we hear and we listen, and that was interesting, and I understand that. Okay, are you going to respond? Are you going to change? What are you going to do about that? I don't know about that. Okay, we got to put it all together. That's what our expectation is. We need to show our love for God by responding when He calls us, by answering when He reaches out for us. If we don't give Him our everything, we're going to miss out. If there's anybody here today who's subject to the gospel's invitation, we invite you to come as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.